All right. So this is the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee meeting. This is a public meeting, and it is being recorded. If you are calling in, please mute your line to avoid any unnecessary background noise. And so we'll do the roll call before we get started. So we've got Judge Augustine.
Yes.
Judge Bremer Curran.
Yes.
Judge Heinrich Humble.
Yes.
Judge Nakamura Orange.
Here.
Judge Riff, Los Angeles.
Here.
Judge Rockwell, Sacramento. There is some traffic on the bridge, so we might have some folks late. Ms. Carter from Los Angeles.
Here.
Ms. Cameron from Tulare.
Here.
Judge Wong from San Francisco.
Here.
Ms. Junior from Sonoma.
Here.
Mr. Kim Marin.
Here.
Mr. Planet Ventura.
Here.
Ms. Sloan Yuba on the phone.
Here.
Ms. Turner Mendocino. And she's also running late. Yes, we've got two folks that will probably join us a bit late. All right. So we're here to talk about the workload assessment, or to talk about a couple items related to the judicial workload study, as well as a couple items related to the RAS model update. So we'll begin by providing that update on the resource assessment study model. This is an information-only item. And there were two interim updates, and then we'll discuss the judicial workload study after that.
All right, first I need a motion on the minutes from the February 26th meeting. If they've been attached. Thank you. Mr. Planet, move to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Judge Bremer moves to second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
And Judge Rockwell up here. Apologies. Any discussion, Judge Rockwell?
No, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. All right, the minutes would pass unanimously from February 26th. So I just have two updates, informational items that I took them out of order from the original agenda so we could get them out of the way, because really the meat of what we're here to talk about is the judicial need study. So two things that happened. Last week I was here in front of the council, and we updated I presented to the council our update to the work year value to change it from the 118,000 minutes to the 98,550, which we voted on in February. I presented it, and it was unanimously approved. That happened last week. So that number will now be used in the fiscal 1920 RAS model. We also another update is we're using the 1.25-to-1 ratio of court reporters to judicial officers because of family law now having court reporters or being required in fee waiver cases. And we also sought approval to change the ratio for court reporters in civil, unlimited, and probate cases to account for the smaller pool of eligible litigants. We've changed that. So those two things have happened for the RAS model. Those are just informational, and if you guys have any questions on any of those things, we'll move on to the judicial study.
One quick question on that, just as it relates to the judicial study. Are we going to poll judges in the current year, or rather budget year, or next year?
Do you have a plan on that? The
judge model is the RAS model? Or?
Well, it's just that we've got those 25 new judges getting implemented in budget year. Are we planning on building in those increase of judges into the RAS model as it relates to the court reporters in budget year or budget year plus one?
No, we don't have to do either. Because the court reporter need is based off of judge need and not actual.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good question.
Tricky question this morning. I had a lot of time to think. There was a lot on market going the wrong way. So.
All right. And then before we get started, there were no public comments, so he's going to add that to the record. Okay. So thank you, Judge. So now we'll move on to the judicial workload study. We have two items related to the judicial workload study, just to go over the update of the judicial workload study and the case weights related to that. The second item will be how it relates to the judicial needs assessment report and the ranking and prioritization of judgeship. So those are two action items, and so we'll go through those now. So the first item being a review of the 2018 judicial workload study update. All right, so we're going to go back a little bit, and I know many of you are familiar with the workload study, but we're just going to do a little soup to nuts and get us to where we are now. So as part of that discussion, what is a workload model? A workload model is a tool that allows us to assign different weights to different types of cases to distinguish an infraction filing from a felony filing in regards to workload. And then these weights we developed from the workload model are based on time, the time involved in resolving those cases. So a workload model allows us to look not just at total filings, but at the time involved with each of those filings. And workload studies are not unique to California or the California Judicial Branch. States across the country use workload models to determine resource needs for court staff, judicial officers, as well as other general classifications. I think at our last count, we had about 25 states that we know doing workload studies. All right, so and then the other key piece of this is how we use that output. So the output is used to determine resource needs, but we also use it to advocate. We advocate for legislatures or new judges. As a court or as a branch, we might understand the need that we have, but we also, the outside entities require us to kind of back that up, and that's where these models can play a huge role. So we also have update cycles for these models. For the judicial workload study, we've got two. We periodically update the case weights. So WAC approved a five-year update schedule in 2013. These updates are regular enough to capture important changes in workload, but keep the model reflective of current practice, but it doesn't overburden the court with more frequent updates. We also do a biennial update. This is for the judicial needs assessment. So we do a biennial update every even numbered year. And when we do these updates, we use the most current filings data available. And then if there are other updates to the model, we incorporate those as well. And then at any other time, we also do interim updates that may fall between these cycles if they're deemed necessary. So I just, for reference, California has conducted the judicial workload study twice in 2001 and 2011. Those studies were conducted by the National Center for State Courts with assistance from JCC staff. The 2018 study is the first time the judicial workload study has been conducted in-house by JCC staff. We did contract with John Grecian throughout the study. He's a consultant who many of you know, and his expertise in all of California judicial branch was critical at key points in the study. All right, so now I know we presented a little bit about this in earlier meetings, but I just wanted to quickly kind of go through some of what we did to get us to this point. So the time study is one of the key elements in updating the case weight. And part of the time study is all the preparation that goes into the time study. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about those milestones. So we began with a pilot study. We had two courts that participated in the pilot study. They were Marin and Placer. We conducted a pilot to get critical feedback from users to work out any kinks, fix any errors, and basically improve how we're carrying out the time study and collect the information that we need to collect. And I just want to say that both courts were engaged, enthusiastic, and provided invaluable input. The tools and materials that made their way to the study courts, the web form and the training materials greatly benefited from their input and expertise. Right, then we just move on to selection and participation. As with all our workload studies and other studies, we try to include courts that represent the diversity of courts in California, from small, medium, and large courts, rural and urban courts, as well as geographic and other factors. This year, one of the determinations in court selection was the idea of developing two case weights for each case type, one for small courts and one for large courts. And therefore, we needed enough data from the small courts to do that. There's less information coming into those courts, so we have to draw a bigger pool of those courts. Although, and jumping ahead a bit, we are not currently proposing adopting two case weights. We think that the study court composition was a great benefit to the study as a whole. Yes.
And a question. What do you consider the small courts? Cluster one courts?
One and two, but one, we haven't included a lot of cluster one courts in the past, and we did focus on bringing in cluster one courts.
So one and two.
Yeah, but mainly one. We've had a lot of twos in the past, cluster two courts, but not so much cluster one.
So when I say small, I kind of mean
but including the cluster two, and if there is a second rate.
And that is, we looked at it both ways, either just a cluster one or a cluster one and cluster two weight.
Okay.
And two has the biggest band in judgeships. I think it ranges from 4 to 15. Right. So the second thing we're sort of eyeing on the side is whether or not we need to revise cluster two a bit, because in the study, the difference between the courts that hover towards the 4 judges and those with the 15 seems like they should not be treated as compatible.
I just wanted to know what was fitting you there.
And if anybody has any questions, don't hesitate to ask.
Yes.
No, this does not have to be a monologue.
Okay, so the study, this is who participated in that study. So we had 6 courts from cluster one, we had 6 courts from cluster two, 4 courts from cluster three, and then 3 courts from cluster four. We had 4 courts in cluster four, but one of the courts had to withdraw. So that's where we ended up with. But we had 19 courts in the study, and we had over 900 judicial officers. That's the largest participation we've had. It's a great representation for California as a whole. All right, so now that we had the courts selected, we needed to do training. So we did a study court participation training in August and September. We did it in person, we did WebEx, and we also created a video. And just going back to the input from the pilot court, the video was suggested by Marin, and it was a great addition to the training materials. And as no good deed goes unpunished, the presiding judge of that court did the opener for the video. And I won't go too far into it, but we had plans to help him do that video, but he did it all on his own. I guess he's a bit of a video buff. He filmed it on his own, changed clothes, did the whole thing. So, did a really nice job. So we appreciate that. Okay, so the time study. After we conducted the trainings, we were ready to conduct the time study. It was implemented in the first 18 of those 19 courts in October. We did that for 4 weeks, October 1st through October 22nd. And then the second court spanned October 22nd through November 16th. We collected data on 31 case types within 4 case phases, and then we collected data on both case-related and non-case-related activities. And this is just a graph to kind of show what we're collecting when we do those workload studies, specifically the judicial workload study. So we're collecting time. We're collecting time on an activity, and then we're asking folks to determine, is that activity case-related or non-case-related? If it's case-related, what's the case type? What is the phase of case? And are there any case characteristics? And those case characteristics are predefined.
So non-case-related would be all this work on WAC.
And this is just a snapshot of that data collection tool. This was a web form. We moved away from a paper form this year. This was a single sheet that folks could either do in real time or do at the end of the day, preferably not at the end of the week, but they could. We did in the training encourage folks to enter time as quickly as possible. But it would also give you a tally at the end, was a really nice feature that our IT folks added so that folks could track all the time that they were entering so they knew they just weren't forgetting anything. So that was a nice tool. So, and we did get feedback that it was a fairly straightforward and simple to use. All right, so time study begins and the data starts coming in. So we had dedicated email and phone lines for folks to call as they had questions so that we could answer those questions in real time to the best of our ability, get those answered quickly. Staff were monitoring the data as it was coming in. And then as that was happening, we also contacted courts just to ensure completeness. So if we saw gaps in the data or we saw non-reporting, we made sure to check in with the court as needed. And if we needed to, one of the things we did prior to the study was get rosters from all the courts to know who was participating. Sometimes we had to update those rosters if that changed throughout the study. So that's what we were kind of doing just to make sure that data was complete as it was coming in. All right, so then that part's done, the study, is the data is entered, and then we move to the post-time study aspect of the study. And before we can start cleaning the data, analyzing the data, and creating that output, we needed to come up with some decision rules around the data. We had courts with partial participation, so in that only half or two-thirds of the court was participating. We knew that going in, and so we had to build those courts up to 100% participation. And we had to make decision rules around that. We had collected data on 31 case types, and we needed to collapse and consolidate that. We don't have filing data on all those as of yet. We know it's coming, so we wanted to be able to collect that information so at a future date if we need to break that out. We also don't have case weights for all the case types, so we need to take those 31 case types and collapse them into the 20 that mimeograph.
So when you did get the partial, did you have to make up the rules court by court? Did you tend to get certain types of, I know that we're aware of system, and my apologies again for not actually being one of the participating counties. But if did you have to like look at whether or not it was a master court or whether or not it was that the civil ones were responding and the crim weren't?
So we, based on the roster, we got a roster of the folks that were participating as well as assignments in the court, and then based on that, built. If we had two criminal judges participating and there were four in the court, we had to build that up to four.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hello.
All right. So then we are ready to start cleaning and analyzing the data. So again, going back to that roster data, so we took the roster data that we had, as well as the time and study data to combine that data and make sure that we had that all complete. And then the second piece of that is to start exploring and visually looking at the data to identify any potential issues, any anomalies in the data, contacting the court to sort that out and figure out if anything needed to be done to address the anomalies in the data or gaps in the data. And then once we did that, we were ready to produce the output to start reviewing what that looked like. And the output here is basically the case rate. All right. And just as a side note, not necessarily a side note, but as we were doing that piece of it, we also were collecting qualitative data. One of the things that was different in this study compared to the 2011 study was the Delphi process where quality adjustments were done to the time study data. They were either time was added, time was deducted from those numbers. We did not do that this year, but that being said, we still wanted that qualitative data. We wanted to better understand the data that we were seeing, validate the data that we were seeing. So we didn't remove these aspects from the study. We kept these in here. So one of those was a supplemental survey that we sent out to the study courts. And this one focused on if you had more time, where would quality of justice be improved if you had more time? The second qualitative piece that we did for data validation calls with each of the courts. And we focused, there was the same set of questions went to every court, and then we had follow-up calls with each of those courts. And it focused on, it's identified here, but things the court does particularly well, things where they could improve, changes in law or court practices, technology in recent years, as well as since 2011, since that last time study. And then anything that was unusual happening in the court that may have impacted the data. And again, just to understand the data, understand what we were seeing, understand the case weights that we were seeing. There is a document in your handout that has greater detail on that input that we received from the court. It's 1C in your materials. So again, some of the things we heard that were impacting workload were new and amended laws, particularly in the area of criminal justice, changes in implementation of the management system, unfunded legislative mandates. So there's a whole list. And in that document, it also breaks it out by case type. So where there were impacts regarding not just general, but specific to a case type. And I think the thing that we found in those calls was they were individual to each court. We didn't bring in a full group. We did them by court. And the consistency of the feedback was striking in what we were hearing about what was impacting. The same case types were coming up, the same issues were coming up. And so I think it just was more of a validation of where we were seeing those impacts to workload. Are there any questions? One just wants to get the good. All right. So now we're ready to talk about the case weights and other model parameters, the work year value, the filings that go into building those case weights. All right, so first we had to establish a methodology for developing the case weights. In 2011, so we made some changes since 2011. A lot of that had to do with the composition of the courts that we had in this study. So in 2011, when they were developing the case weights, they took the total time and the total filings from those courts and created an average based on that. It's a fine way to do it if the courts are very similar in how they look in terms of size and other factors. Because we had very small courts and very large courts, we felt that that would lean to the largest court in the study. If you have a court with 300 and a court with 3, that weight is going to reflect that court with 300. So we went with a median when we were looking at developing the case weight. And to do that, we needed to first develop court case weights and then take a median of those to get the case weight by a case type. So we felt this just represents that court composition and gives that voice to the smaller court in the study. So that's why we made that selection to go with median and change that from the previous study. All right, and so this is just a graph showing how we did that. So the first step, again, is to develop that court case weight before we can develop the median case weight by case type. And that's just the step one up there shows it's just time by filing, the time from the time study, and then you take all those individual court case weights. Again, you're going to do this for every case type, and then you take the median. So the median is going to take all those outliers and all those numbers, but it's going to temper some of those outliers. And this is based on that methodology for calculating the case weights. This is in 1A in your materials. These are the case weights based on that methodology. And before I go on, I would like to highlight one area here that we would like to bring to the committee to talk about is the complex case. One of One is the, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That, what was the spread between that is the median and the, how far off or how, what kind of a spread are you looking at when you're looking at between the small and the bearish?
So, I mean, there is variation when we're looking at those, and we did have, in every single case type, we did have outliers, and we tend, the small cores, and in general, not across all case types, the small cores tend to have the higher weight. But, and I'll show a graph when we come up a little bit that may answer that question a little bit better, in specifically in regards to these case types, and then compared to kind of what we saw in complex, and why we are highlighting that one case type. And I'll just jump to that right now. So for the most part, this is an example of one area, one case type. And you can kind of see there's variation, but the median, which is that red or orange line right there in the middle, they tend to kind of be around that line with some variation. If we look at complex, it's a very different picture. So for the most part, the other case types look similar to what we're seeing in that felony example. When we look at complex, it's a little bit different. So we're just bringing that to the attention of the committee to see if there's possibly a different approach that we want to take for that particular case.
So I do believe that the complex civil needs to be handled differently. I think that the spread of the data points artificially pushes the minutes low. If you go back to your graph, I think that demonstrates it best. And so I do think that we need to be more representative of what those minutes actually are. There are only a few courts that primarily take the Judicial Council consolidated cases, which are part of this group. And I would be willing to wager lunch, dinner, whatever, that they are the courts that are taking the most time. I don't know who they are, but I think that it's important that when we are developing a methodology that we have to be flexible enough to understand that certain litigation areas, this one in particular jumps out to me, if it has that kind of a spread, we need to use a different methodology. And so what would you propose as the new methodology?
So, and one of the things Shira is going to point out is that, as you can see on the left, we had felony workload reported by every court in the study. So all 19 had felony workload during the 4 weeks. The complex, and the reason why we are pausing on this one is that you can see we only had workload reported from, 10 or 11 courts. So there are some courts that do not have this workload at all.
Exactly. And I just wanted to throw in that you do see it bunched around, so it wouldn't have been caught during that window period of time.
Right.
But I think measuring the numbers by courts that actually do it makes much more sense. That's a good point. I think that even validates it more because, so I do support using a different approach. And would be curious what recommendation you would suggest we use for a complex civil.
And as we were looking at this and looking at how to approach it, one of the things, so within the 2011 method, they did that totals by totals average. And in it, they had courts of similar size, which is what we're seeing here. Those filings were all similar in those size courts. So that methodology for this particular case type
makes sense.
Could make sense, yes.
Then I would propose that we use that methodology. I don't know if it's too early for a motion because I certainly don't want to rush it, but
it's not really pointing it.
Well, not that I know what time it starts or anything, but no. It does seem,
I just want to make sure everyone's tracking.
Yeah. I want to hear it again.
Because whatever Charlie's motion
is.
I've been on this committee a long time, and it takes me, a while to track some of these numbers that you guys that are in CEOs that are doing. So I just want to make sure everyone else is on board before we make a change like this in the model, instead of using median for everything
except this.
Yeah. Sherry's motion is that looking at the data, the way it's spread out, is that the median is probably not capturing the right case weight or the number of minutes that it takes to process a complex civil case in the state of California, and that we're suggesting that we use the average
number of minutes using those same numbers, and that that would be the case where the number of minutes that the state we would say it takes to process a complex civil case in the state of California.
So breaking out complex civil.
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree. I know we're one of the counties that does it, and when we get a consolidated case, you just lose that department.
Well, we're not changing
completely.
We're not changing, taking consolidated cases. We're still having a complex civil case weight. We're just changing the way we calculate what the case weight is rather than using the new median approach because we have so few.
We have less data.
We have less data.
And
the data spread is so different. I think that we should always look at the facts and the data to make the right decision. That, to me, tells the story. And then, of course, Henrik's comment, I think, makes sense. The ones that are taking less minutes because complex in a smaller court is done either as part of a mixed calendar or part of an overall civil calendar, they're not going to be working on it. They may not have worked it during the 2 weeks that they did the survey. So I think for those reasons, I do think that we should, I would move at whatever time you think is appropriate that we use the average and not the median for complex civil.
Yeah. Let me ask another question for those who know. Is there a significant difference between a consolidated complex case and a run-of-the-mill complex case?
There can be.
Yeah, so, all right, so.
But there also could not be. I mean,
we've got apples, oranges, and strawberries.
Well, but that would be true, Mike, really with unlimited civil or with a felony criminal case. What drives it here is look at the data difference from the courts that are primarily handling those bigger complex cases versus the ones that either weren't measured correctly. And that's what to me tells the story. So I appreciate you showing us that graph because I think that tells the story.
Can we go back one slide then? So right now, if we use the median method, the complex weight. And, you know, one other thing I think is different is So we have not had a complex weighting on the judge model yet. So if you remember on the staff workload side, we developed a complex model after the last RAF study. So we didn't have it, or between two studies. We did it as an interim weight. So up until this point, we haven't had a measure of complex judge workload. If you compare it to Asbesto, which is a different type of complex workload, it's right now, using the median approach, the weight is 268 minutes compared to Asbesto's at 553.
Yeah.
And I think we did some preliminary work in exploring what would happen if we did it on the NCSC's method of totals over totals. We come out with a weight that's much more similar to what the Asbesto weight is.
Yeah.
And that is actually a really good comparison. Lots of management. Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Judge Plum?
This is a matter of being a little more granular here. I'm sorry. Where does the CEQA cases fall? Are they considered complex?
They're in that, complex. Yep.
Because those two, for a small county, they may not have something at the moment during that period, but then they might get thrown out by,
one case,
somebody wants to put in a Costco, in the middle of town.
That's another good example of the complex civilian.
Third runway at LAX. That tied up our margin is like 2 years.
Now the appropriate time, or did you want to wait until the end?
Well, I think what we may need to do is probably want the committee to see what the proposed rate would be.
Right. We'd like to see what that is. And we talked about this, so you have a draft of what the new complex civil case rate would be. Have a slide on that?
So I don't think we have a slide, but do we have a...
We have a number?
Yeah. So I'm wondering if we should take a break. Can I give us a minute to get some materials that would respond to this? And if we're going to put something up, we probably want to post it so that those who are following are following.
Okay. All right. Let's take a 10-minute break.
15.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that'd
be great.
Think,
and thank you for that.
Hey, Sherry, do you think the consolidated cases through the, excuse the complex? So in other words, asbestos is kind of complex, so.
Can you put the line on mute so we're discussing?
Asbestos kind of.
All right, we're going to get started a little longer than 15 minutes. That was not their fault. That was me gabbing. Sorry about that. Okay, so we're ready. Do we have a new slide or we have a handout?
So, Judge, we did not make a slide for it because of the technical issues. So we passed everything out on paper, and then for those who are joining by phone, we've asked that the new materials get posted online. Essentially, it's the replacement of attachments 1A and 1B.
So what you can see is that the case later, the number of minutes for us that don't think that way, the number of minutes that in the state of California that we take to process a complex civil case, 707 minutes. Much more reflective, I think, closer to the expected case weight. And so with that, I'll turn it back over to Kristen. So does everybody understand what that is? Are there any questions about it? We'll turn it over. No, and thank you for doing that so quickly.
So do you want now, Sherry, to have your motion?
I would like to move that for complex civil, we use the, whatever you want to call this methodology to determine the weight for complex civil, which would be different than the methodology used based on medium for the other two.
Second.
So, motion made by Sherry Carter, second by Judge Wong. Any discussion?
I'm sorry, just to confirm, using the average
aggregated
as opposed to the median?
Aggregated average.
Okay. Thank you. So, I guess just from a data process and methodology perspective, and when you break from the overall methodology using data, there's literally some justification. And I get the justification, but I'm wondering, is that because we don't have enough data to come to a better median number? And then with the median number, if we had more data, show that the 707 was the appropriate case weight. And I guess if that's the conclusion, is it an issue about collecting more data versus changing the overall methodology? Because you're creating sort of an exception. And I think you're going to have to explain the exception. So every single time we explain and have high-level conversations around this caseload study, we're going to have to say, well, there's an asterisk, and the asterisk is complex, and we had to change this because we didn't have a large enough data set, and then you have to explain why we didn't have a large enough data set. So I'm wondering if the data, if we had a large enough data set, would show the same thing. Why not go and collect additional data so that you could keep the overall process consistent?
So I think I would venture to say that even if we expanded the number of courts, we will never see a complex civil matter, perhaps in a very small jurisdiction. Or the likelihood is very rare. So I don't know if we could ever get a data set where all the data elements be reported. And I think the exception is justified in this case because a complex and also a asbestos are the only two case types that didn't occur in all 19 courts during the study. In asbestos, we had an even number of courts participating, so the median and the mean were identical, so there's no need to make any sort of adjustment there. Complex was the only one that didn't have sufficient data points. So I think that, yeah, we could achieve the same result maybe by narrowing the number of study courts and constructing a study around those that have the data. But I think in this case, because we have our idea was to be inclusive across different court types, that this is the best approach that we could take given the data that we have.
Hey, just a quick follow-up question. So could we not create sort of the data fill or the data gap that existed in other like case types? So like, for example, if not all the courts participated and you were missing data, I think I had heard earlier that you made up assumptions to sort of create a full data set. And so I'm wondering, can that methodology also be used to create maybe the same types of data gaps that you have with complex? So that, again, you wouldn't have to break necessarily from the overall methodology.
In that case, when we are building up the court case weight to account for partial participation, we're basing it on that court data that we have received. So if we were to make up, we will be making up data if we were to do that, what you're saying, still gap. So I don't think we can actually do that.
And the other opportunity I just want to point out is that because this is the first time we've done complex, the next time we do the evaluation, yeah, we'll have a baseline, and we could maybe then have more data points at that point. But
yeah,
I think this is the right approach for this for now, and I appreciate you looking at us quickly.
Yeah. I would
say that if you were to do it again, you might run it longer for complex, you know, do something different to get more data points, but you'll know what you'll need next time. I support what we're doing this time.
And then also just on the future. So again, I do support change. Just it's such a dramatic graph. But then also taking a look at, I know we've got the complex civil for whom files the filing fees. I know Sacramento's raised this issue in the past. But if there's complex cases filed by governmental entities that just submit a fee waiver and never check the box, I think it's important for us to capture that data as well.
We need to figure that out, but another day, right?
But yeah,
yeah,
I understand another day. Not, yeah, yeah. That's certainly not,
yeah,
something for today.
All right. So then just wanted to walk through how we then start to calculate that need, taking that set of case weights that we see.
Can we finish the motion?
Okay.
So, any other discussion? We have voted, I know.
No.
Is there any other discussion on the motion that's pending? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, thank you.
Go ahead. All right. Okay, so this is just how we get then to that that full-time equivalent need, that judicial need in the court, taking the data points that we have. So now we've got the case weight. We're going to multiply that by filings. We use three-year average filings, the most recent filings data available. For this particular iteration, it would be 15-16, 16-17, and 17-18. And then we also, this is where the work year value comes in. The number that we've used to do these calculations is the 77,400 case-related time. We use this in 2011 as well. I have a breakdown here how we get to that 77,400. We start with 365 days. We subtract out weekends, holidays, and vacation and leave days. That leaves us with 215 days. We multiply that by 6 hours, which is case-related time, and then we multiply that by the minutes, 60 minutes, and we get that 77,400 case-related minutes to use as the work year value. Any questions on that? And so we'll talk about that in item two. So then that brings us to how we start to apply the data here and getting to the judicial needs and the prioritization. I'm going to turn it over to Leah to talk about the 2019 judicial needs assessment and the prioritization based on the new case weight.
Okay, so just a reminder, the judicial needs assessment is a biennial report to the legislature that we produce and that the workload committee reviews in the even numbered years. And we usually, the submission deadline is November 1st. So usually in the fall, we'll send the report to the committee for their review before we submit it. And we did that on November 1st, 2018, but we issued a preliminary report in which we said that as of November 1, we didn't have the new case waves because we're working on those right now. So we issued the needs assessment with a big cautionary set of caveats saying we will reissue that needs assessment once the new waves have been finalized. So that's what we're planning to do if the committee votes to move the weights forward and is taken to the council at the July meeting, then we will at the same time reissue the judicial needs assessment. And it is for those who have participated in some of the budget phone calls or have heard, there is a possibility that the branch would be receiving 25 new judgeships this year. And so timing-wise, it's become important that we issue the needs assessment as soon as possible because the legislature is interested in seeing what the need is and where the what the courts are, who the courts are that are most in need of new judgeships. So if we take a look at 1B in your materials, and we reissued 1B and gave it to you as a separate sheet here. It's in the process of being posted on the public website as well. So we reran 1B using the new complex weight, and in doing so, that gets you the judgeship need that's shown in column H of the material. So just to orient you kind of right to left on the sheet, we've got all the courts in alphabetical order. The authorized and funded judgeships are listed in column A. And I'm sorry, that's the judicial positions, not just judgeships. So authorized and funded judicial positions listed in column A. And I'm just going to skip over columns B through D because that's the preliminary need without the complex adjustment. So looking again at the far right side of the page, H through I, H shows how many judges are needed in each court based on the new workload measures. Column I shows the difference between H and A for each court, so the difference between your need and how many authorized positions you have. And then column J is the first step for how we prioritize and allocate new judgeships. So I'll get into, I'll talk about J more specifically in a minute. But setting that aside, we also included in the center columns, E through G, the results of the preliminary needs assessment that we submitted in the fall. So you can see how the need has shifted based on the new weight.
So Leah, does that mean, I'm just curious more than anything, because there's quite a dip in 2018. Was 2014-15 that bad a year of pilots? Did anybody remember?
Well, it would have been at the height of it.
It partly was. I think the other thing, too, is we're really seeing an upswing this last year in 17-18 for all courts in limited civil and infraction. So there seems to be a recovery that we haven't seen in a number of
years.
I just
forgot. Yeah, I just.
Yeah.
It's all dull black hole in 2017.
So
just in case anybody wants to know besides me in the future, I mean important to point out that the difference is because 14-15 was such a down year because of the economy and all that.
Yeah, I think we should highlight that. And I think 14-15 was also the first year that you saw Prop 47 go into effect. So you immediately had that dip in the felony filings,
right.
Down 30%. There wasn't quite a 30% increase in the misdemeanor non-traffic. It was somewhat of a lower percentage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's another factor.
Yeah. I hate to lose that because memories are
Black.
That's
a really good point.
It was also a time when courts were hubbing and they weren't growing. They were closing courthouses.
Yes, are you looking at me as the...
No, we are hubbing.
We are a hubbing. We're hubbing.
I think we'll do that for 12
thing. Well, we kept doing it.
Bottom of the scale.
Yeah.
I forget Prop 47.
More things to add to the...
Prop 47 shifted all the high weight felonies to lower weight misdemeanors.
Right. So the bottom line is that for the new workload model with a new complex adjustment shows a statewide need for 232 judgeships. And remember, we come to that number by adding up the numbers that are shown above in column J. And that's
two that we ran that very quickly, and we will go back in.
And
redo that?
Yeah. Okay. No, that's a really good point.
Compared to 2018, our preliminary statewide needs assessment was shown as 127 judges. That's shown in column C. So there have been shifts, and yes, we will go back and make sure that we've done all of our computations correctly, and if something shifts, then we will come back to the committee via email if we need to. Okay. Yeah. All right. So the next thing that I want to talk about is prioritization. So this is something that's come up in, with respect to these 25 new judges that the branch is possibly going to receive. There's been a lot of interest in understanding how it is that we prioritize the need for new judgeships. So we've included a document here, 2A in your materials, and it's a summary of the policy decisions that go into prioritizing judges, and it talks a little bit about the math that's needed to determine needs. Because if you look at the list here in column J, you would think, okay, well, Fresno, according to this list, shows it's needing 15 judgeships, and San Joaquin shows it's needing 10. So how do we determine, when you have 25 judgeships, how do we determine the relative need of a court like Fresno compared to another court like San Joaquin, the example that I provided? So the parameters spell out some of the decision rules that the council has made in the past relative to judgeships. Looking at, again, 2A of materials on page 10, and the first step in doing so is doing exactly what we've just done, which is showing, producing a judicial needs assessment using the most recent filing data. And the second step that we do is we produce a list like you see here in column J. So we show that net difference between need and authorized positions. And in some of the cases, I just wanted to point out, and Judge Rockwell, you were very helpful. Actually, no, I think we're okay in this list.
Yeah, I think it shifted with the complex.
Yeah.
Got rid of those issues.
So Judge Rockwell has pointed out to me, in the middle here is the section column C through G. You see a couple of courts like Merced is one of them. No, it's actually, I'm sorry, it's column
Imperial.
C. It's column C, yeah. Mm-hmm. Merced and Imperial. It looks like Imperial needs two judgeships, but in column B they're shown as need just one. This is just an issue that has to do with the decimals. If I were to expand that number for Imperial to 2.0, it's actually 1.98 or something like that. And so they do not quite need two judicial officers. That's why they've got a one there. I think those issues have all resolved itself now with that complex addition.
I think so.
So the first, after we have computed the judicial needs, the council made a policy decision in 2014 to set the qualifying threshold for new judgeships at 0.8 FTE. And the reason why they did that was there were a lot of smaller courts, in the like two-judge courts, that were showing some growth in workload, but never quite could hit that threshold to qualify for a judge. And so by lowering that initial qualifying threshold to 0.8, all that means is that you need to show a 0.8 in that column J in order to get on the list. So I think we had a court I just scanned through and saw that, for example, San Luis Obispo is in that situation on our new list here in column I. Their need is just shy of one FTE, but they get on the list because they show a need for at least 0.8. So this, again, was a policy directed at making sure that smaller courts have that opportunity to at least get on the list, a new judgeship, but that they can at least get onto the list. So the next thing we have to do is we use a methodology that's based on the same parameters and principles as how seats are allocated in Congress. And it has to do with this size difference we have in California with state courts and small courts. Judge Rockwell, you wanted to ask a question?
More just a suggestion. So after our discussion yesterday, and I really do appreciate you taking your time to answer some of my questions, it might be helpful to add something to page 10 to just make it clear that only applies to that first judgeship. That way, if you get a member's question from one of the counties that says, but I need 3.8, why am I not getting 4? It's explained that it's really just for those small counties and it's for that very first judgeship.
Thank you for recalling that. Yeah, so I'll have some language to that effect, because that's exactly the case. If you show up on this list, like, for example, Placer's in the situation with a need for 3.9, we don't automatically bump that to 4. We say, no, you qualified for judgeships already. It's not right. It's not on your subsequent judgeship. So, yeah, that's a good add. Okay, so again, going to this issue of scaling, we've got big courts and small courts, and so how do we evaluate those size differences? We have courts that on our list that need one judgeship, but that one judgeship may represent 20% of their workload needs, right? And then you may have a really large court, LA at the other end of the spectrum with 500 judges, if you needed, for example, 10 judgeships, that would just be a tiny percentage of your overall bench size. So we have to use this methodology to find a way to account for those differences in scale. So we multiply judicial need using a set of ranking scores that come through this mathematical method called the Huntington-Hill method. And I put a couple of links in the document. They were actually very user-friendly if you wanted to read more about this or cure your insomnia or whatever your needs might be. But the end result is that you end up with a set of scores that we then evaluate three different ways. We compute the scores first, which takes into account each court's absolute need, so your total need for judgeship. And if we stopped at this point in time, then it would be only our courts with the biggest numerical need for judgeship that would be factored in. So our San Bernardino, our Riverside, for example. Question? No? Question, Mike? No, okay, sorry. I thought you were on the verge of asking. So then we take a second ranking score, which then helps us factor in the percentage need for judgeship. So this is the second cut of the score, the second iteration of the score, is what helps factor in the need in those smaller courts like Butte on our list, who only needs one judgeship, but that 1 over 14 is, you know, something like 20% of their overall bench size. So again, if we stopped at this point in time, then we would only be accounting for those two factors, your absolute need, your numerical need, and your percentage need. So then we take a final adjustment, which is, again, intended to spread the judgeships out throughout the state a little more, to disperse them more so that more counties have access to these judgeships. And so that final adjustment puts a little bit more weight on each court's first judgeship relative to all other judgeships that they need. So we end up with this large, with a list with all of our needed judges by court in a numeric list. And I think we show it here on page 12 of our material, 2D. We didn't include the ranking scores themselves because they're just a number with a bunch of decimal points. But the end result is that if we take our list, and I realize now we have to update this list based on our new complex adjustment. Nevertheless, we did at least check and make sure that the first 25 positions on this priority list that you see on page 12, even with our new complex adjustment that we discussed this morning, these 25 are unchanged. So there's no change in ordering or prioritization of the 25, even with our complex adjustment. So this shows how the judgeships would be allocated in numeric order. And the benefit of having a list like this is if we are, it helps us when we discuss with the legislature, for example, where are the first 25 judgeships going, where are the first 10 going, and sometimes those numbers change. And so knowing the order of how judgeships might be allocated is useful so that we can evaluate, depending on the size of the judgeships that are under consideration for allocation. So it's been a long time since we have talked about the prioritization method, and we didn't have anything
written up on it. Again, it reflects council priorities at the time. The priorities that I would say are, again, accounting for needs of small courts, trying to disperse judges to the most jurisdictions, and also accounting for courts who have just great large judgeship needs. So I think for this one, did we ask for a...
So can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm so glad that your master now same as mine in terms of the number. The budget includes 25. There's no reason to believe it won't, right? We haven't heard any...
They know.
Okay.
All we've heard is that they want to know where they're going to go.
Okay. It makes sense to me, the methodology you've used. And so I'll let someone else make a motion, but I certainly support it. I think that you've tried to find a way where it fairly distributes them based on size, percentage of need, and everything else. I think the methodology is solid, and that's what I always try to look at.
Leah, we used the same methodology when we were allocating the commissioners.
Oh, something else years ago, they asked us to, was it SGO conversion?
Or maybe it was SGO conversion, how we convert,
yeah.
Something with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is the same methodology that I presented to the council years ago, 5 years ago maybe.
Yeah, we had actually never changed this.
Yes.
We first adopted it in 2000.
Yeah.
I would recommend also adding that to what we're saying, and that was very helpful for me. I wasn't, when I was going through the materials initially, I didn't know if this was just created because we finally got the funding.
No.
For the 25 judges, but since this is something that's been used, I think that that would also be helpful to the legislature. This isn't something that just got created when we found out that this is the thing that we've been using, and like maybe walk through that it's been the method used in previous allocations.
To depoliticize it.
Right.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great, thank you. And this is just more, it's for future thought. One of the things that I've done when we went, and I do actually support this allocation for the first 25, so what I'm about to say may sound like I'm not, but I think that this is a good spread. It meets a lot of the criteria. I think it's, and since it's one that we've used, it's very easy to explain to the legislature that we're doing it by numbers, and we're doing it by methodologies that have been used in the past. So one thing I do note is, so just with the updated numbers, this would move like San Bernardino to 59.6% of their needs met with the complex numbers tossed in, and Riverside with like 63.8%. Even not using the complex, we would need like 82 new judges for San Bernardino and Riverside to touch 70%. So I don't know if we want to put in another thing if we keep, it would be really nice if we kept getting judges. But if we do keep getting judges, maybe we look at yet another factor. It would cause the distribution to be slightly more compact, and I guess that also has policy implications. But at least based on our numbers, we're getting, of the 17 courts that need judges, into the 90s and 95% before San Bernardino and Riverside are into the mid-70s.
So you would weight the percentage of need as a higher weight in the factors? Because really that's what you're doing, is you're applying factors and then applying weight. You would put a higher factor on the weight having to do with the differential between need authorized and funded. And so that's what that would do.
Right. And I think
okay.
That's one possibility, or maybe doing it as a slightly more complicated weighting system where if you are below a certain threshold, there's a little bit more additional weight. And if you're above a certain threshold, maybe it's a more complicated method. So, because otherwise, I do think you'd have the issue, and I think that makes it a different policy discussion, that if we got another 25 judges and they went to two counties,
yeah, right.
not saying they don't need those, but that really changes the dynamic of the conversation. So maybe more of a tweak than a full-on change, or maybe something different if you hit 90%.
Average line, whatever it is,
right.
85%, 80%, and anything below that gets a higher weight until they get to that line and then it's applied.
But yeah, I think that we'd have to have E&T direct us to do that. Because we have a formula that is, the Judicial Council has asked us to create a formula. It's been created years ago, and this is the formula they are comfortable with. And before I want to start proposing another formula, we're just the statisticians that do the work and come up with the data. And E&P is, I think that's above our pay grade to try to create a different policy. Now, E&P could say, you know what, we don't like the way this shakes out because of the percentages.
But I would feel more comfortable if that came down from them to say, when you come up with a new formula, because then we're starting to be more political. In this committee, we try to stay out of the politics.
Well, and then that may be more of a situation where we make sure that they see that data. Because the way I did that was I sent it my kitchen table on Sunday and looked at how long it would take San Bernardino. And I just pulled them as an example because I'm not really all that great with numbers and I can't make my computer do it for me. So, but how long would it take for them to get at 70% and what the other counties look like in that situation?
I try to keep this committee at looking at the data.
And again, I don't think given where the other counties are, I don't think it matters at all for the first 25. It's more if we start getting another 50 or 60 judges on top of these 25, where you really start seeing that sort of disparate. And if we are the max people, then letting the policy people know that that's coming is probably not a bad thing to do what they want to do with it.
What I'd like to add to the report is that, and I'm going to support it because I do believe we're not the politics person, but what this does is there's two counties that have between over 25% need up to a 33% need. It's not included in the one judgeship. And I guess, to me, in some ways it's talking about as much as Riverside and San Bernardino and all the ones that need have are there, that if the courts that had over 25% needs got one even in those two counties, they'd be out of the equation forever, and then the legislative discussion gets to be, let's deal with those way underjudged all the way. And I want to recognize the methodology and go with that, but I like to just throw in as kind of an asterisk, if this methodology needs two courts that have an over 25% need without getting any judge. If they say, let's get 30 judges then and include those. I mean, I don't want to leave anybody out, and I think it's important that we stay consistent, but I think pointing out that this methodology does leave courts that have an over 25% need not getting a judge should just be in the discussion.
So we do actually put a table in our judicial needs assessment report to the legislature that shows the percentage gap.
Okay.
And I think that probably helped inform the judges that we do get. So we can definitely highlight that as well.
Because I do think that, I mean, you know, in situations where you say, okay, we're going to get everybody, you know, and not talk about, because I think it's wrong to say overjudge court. I think that's the wrong word. You shouldn't say that. They may be the ones that are actually funded correctly. The courts that have to just go 100 miles an hour every minute of the day, that's just not the best way to talk about what judgeships should be. And that's a different discussion for another day of what it should really look like in the course of the day. But I think that if this first group could get as many judges, you know, we do it with when money comes in, you know, we fund everybody sort of in one way, and then we get the people above and below the line kind of thing. So I just think that that should be highlighted or in some way talked about, not because I think anything should change, because I support the methodology. I don't think it should be changed to benefit one or the other necessarily, but it should be a tool for those discussions higher up to say, well, in this year, do we want to vary for those courts? And I don't know, I didn't look, there may be some, a cluster one courts that also have that higher need. I was just looking, most are in there, and I might have my numbers wrong. But anyway, I just think that
And you maybe even, well, that's all it's going to have.
Is there a motion?
I'll move approval of the staff recommendation.
Second?
Second.
Any more discussion?
And the approval will include the revision that Judge Rockwell suggested for number two about the 0.8 applying just to the first judge.
Okay.
Make an edit. As well as some sentence in the introductory material that show that, or to indicate that the method is going to be used since at least 2001. Same method.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Wow, 11:30, that's like a new record for me. Thank you.
We have.
So the next thing that I'm going to do is at the Judicial Council meeting on the 18th or 19th of July, be presenting the judicial lead study and the priority list. They're already going to have the priority list because they're waiting for it. And if we voted today, they're already going to be taking it in the legislature. So maybe they're not going to, maybe they're going to put us on consent and I won't come up and stand there. But and then,
and you said judicial need for that.
Right.
Anybody know off the top of their heads the staff allotments with each judicial position?
Eight.
You know, I don't know. It's not really set in stone. We had previously looked at the number of judicial officers compared to the staff need and RAS and come up with 8.7 or something. There was a BCP a few years ago that proposed an allotment of 3 for everyone. So it feels like
it's. What do we do with the position between the IRFs? That was 8, is that right?
Yeah, they got the equivalent of me.
Yeah, okay. Well, we don't know what's the other thing.
There's no tie between RAS and judicial needs because that's completely staff work. And as we all know, judge work doesn't necessarily tie into staff work because, you know, we do different things and we have administrative things and stuff like that.
Yeah, I just wondered
there's no tie.
Wonder if that $30 million includes
staff.
Any staff help.
Yeah. It's been an aside for 2021, it would float through on the court reporting.
Yes. Well, on the RAS side.
On the RAS side, yeah.
So we want to say, and I'm putting this in some of it, but I'm saying it. Thank you to the study courts that participated in this. I know it's a lot of work, and any of you that are either listening or that participated, that it's a lot to sell to your court, to your judicial officers to do this. Take time and to be with. So, but really the big thank you goes to the JC staff that put these numbers, that clean this data, to get it so that we can understand it. I don't even know what that means to clean data. But I know that you did it. And so thank you to Leah and to her team and Kristen and Ulana. You're new to our team?
I know. Newish.
Newish. Okay, well, welcome.
You're here.
Yep.
Great job.
And thank you for running an efficient meeting.
Let's finish early.
We are done.
Right?
We are done. There is a lot.
Get the plane here.
All right. I'm going to hang up the line.
Yeah, well, you might take a